You need to post a poll reader. Eight. Self-seeking will slip away. I've been in Overeaters Anonymous for 10 years, and next Saturday I will have 5 years of back-to-back abstinence. I am still a baby in the program, I understand, until you've been in at least 5 years. Been abstinent for at least 5 years. So my self-seeking has not completely slipped away. but I imagine, like everything else the speakers that have gone before me, what they said is this happens gradually. And it's as if one day after a long time in program, you will be able to consider others first instead of always thinking of me, and I. So I'm really looking forward to the day when I will not be self-seeking. I can hardly begin to tell you I'm there yet, because sometimes I am completely self-absorbed and concerned about things that if I could get out of myself, I'm sure, and concentrate on others, I wouldn't have the concerns that I have. But I'm working on that. Every day, I think another reason why I don't do it so much for myself, I think I deserve to to think about myself, because on my job every day I'm considering about others all the time. So when I have time to myself, I think, well, you kind of deserve to spend some time thinking about yourself, rather than because my job I'm constantly giving to others, and I enjoy that in my job. That's one of the reasons why I chose to do what I do, is because I wanted to help other people. And sometimes in the process of helping other people, I find that I really help myself the most. And I'm sure that in the program I will get to that point where I will not be so concerned about myself. And I really have been since I was like 18 months old. That's when I first started binging, and I had such a horrific childhood and so much trauma and so much just so much trauma in my childhood, that the problem was I used the food to keep all that down, and I didn't even realize I had trauma in my childhood until I got to OA, and I was at that time 52 years old. So I had like slept, walked through life, and because of that, I also think sometimes that I need to give a little time to myself. And I know that unless I love myself first, I really can't love anybody else. So I think more important than being so absorbed with myself, I really need to learn to love myself. And then I'll be able to love others. Thank you.
So now, I'm Eleanor, I'm a compulsive overeater. And I want to thank Matt for asking me, Matt, wherever you are, for asking me to speak at this program. When I first came in to the program, my abstinence date is February 1, 1996. And I'm very grateful for the abstinence that I have. When I came to my very first meeting, which was actually not an OA meeting, it was an Al-Anon meeting, I just couldn't believe that there were people who felt the way I felt, and basically that they had felt a sense of hopelessness and a sense of not belonging. And I immediately felt as if I belonged when I came into the rooms, and at the end of the meeting they read the promises, and it literally brought me to tears. I wanted that so badly, what is described. And my very first amends, real amends, was in this program. I made an amends to my mother, and my mother had passed away 10 years before I even got to the rooms. And if you listen to my version of the story, it was because of my mother that I had to come to these rooms. I was very resentful and angry, and everything was her fault. And you know, and I can tell you why everything was her fault in quite detail. My shares were all about that. About, you know, how she had overfed me. Maybe a compulsive overeater. And, you know, that's the thing where I think it's Dr. Bob, and Dr. Bob's nightmare, he says nobody had ever forced liquor down our throats. I thought, well, no, she forced food down, you know. So, I'm sure it's that. Anyway, I finally made an amends to my mother, and I heard a guy speak who said that he had forgiven his father. And I remember thinking, why would anybody want to do that? Because, you know, I had pushed down the feelings with the food all my life, and I was just getting in touch with my anger once I got into these rooms. And it really felt empowering. And for a while, you know, it was all about letting out the anger. And I didn't want to forgive anybody. But ultimately, through the process of the 12 steps and my 9th step, I made an amends to my mother, as I said, who was already deceased. And what the miracle that happened for me was that when I forgave my mother for not being the perfect mother, I was suddenly able to forgive myself for not being the perfect daughter. And my whole life had always been about what a bad person I was. And I couldn't accept my humanity and the fact that I was just another human being. I, you know, mistakes were unforgivable. That was my feeling. And I couldn't forgive myself. So when they talk about our whole attitude and outlook upon life has changed, my whole attitude has changed, because now when I look at people, I can see their humanity. I mean, believe me, I am a work in progress, and I'm not good at accepting everybody every day all the time. But I'm so much better. I am so much better, you know, at just allowing people to be human and to make mistakes, and that it's just okay. And, you know, 99% of what I was upset about and 99% of what I was eating over was because somebody somehow had let me down or had not, you know, they just weren't acting the way they were supposed to act. If they would only act the way they were supposed to act, I wouldn't have to eat. So, you know, to walk through life now, and like I said, I don't do it perfectly, but I'm so much better at just accepting people, and, you know, they're human, they're a child of God, and so am I. That perfectionism thing, I can really date my abstinence back to when I heard somebody talk about perfection at the birthday party in 1996, and I realized that that was a big part of my disease. And, you know, trying to be perfect is trying to be God. I mean, you know, when I think I have to be perfect, that means I think I'm God. And I'll never forget what an old-timer said to me when I was early in program. I was at a meeting, and I really struggled with God stuff. I was an atheist when I came in, agnostic on a good day. And I was sharing about, there's no God, there's been a God, how come I was abused, blah, 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 blah. And this woman came up to me after the meeting, and I'll never forget it. It was in the Crenshaw District, and it was one of those meetings where they had people from different programs, and she was an alcoholic, and I was scared of alcohol because I grew up in an alcoholism. And she said, "All you need to know about the higher power is that it's not you." That's what she, you know. And every time I start spinning, I just think, all I need to remember is that I'm not God. And if I can remember that, there's a chance for me. It's when I forget that I really get in trouble. So I am so grateful to be on this program, and I'm grateful I'm asking today. Thank you.
I'm Ellen. I'm a compulsive overeater. And thank you, Matt, very much for asking me to speak, and thanks to everyone else. It's really an honor to be here. So I have 10 fear of people and of economic insecurity will leave us. And when I picked this one, I told Matt, wait, let me pick another one. This is like the only promise that doesn't apply to me. And then... such humility. Because what I read is economic insecurity will leave us, and I've been very, very fortunate, and I've never had economic insecurity. And then I read it again. Well, actually, what I thought is, no, I don't get to pick another one. That's me trying to manage and control, which, oh, what a surprise. And that the probably one of the first things I learned in this program is that there are no mistakes in God's world, and that I was supposed to get this one. And so I read it again, and I go, oh, fear of people with economic insecurity. Oh, yeah, that I have, both of those. And in my mind, that's a lot more screwed up than that. I mean, anyway. So, I don't know, and just when I was kind of thinking about it, just thinking that, yeah. And the reason, you know, is like I've always been very, very fortunate, you know, kind of, I've made a great living, and I came in a program, I was like, oh, I'm making all this money, but I'm fat, that's my only problem, like, you know, and I have friends, and and I remember I was in this job that was so great that I hated, and I was extremely unhappy, and I would go in with, like, the flu, and my sponsor would be like, honey, can you just call in sick? No, I can't call in sick, I'll get in trouble, like, they'll give me a bad review, like, crazy. And she's like, okay, can you just go in at 10? And I was like, okay, I can go in at 10. And like, I would be like, so, and it just, that memory flooded back to me. And I have such recovery in that area. I'm no longer in that job, thank God. But it's like, just what I've heard, you know, and of course I wasn't afraid of people and I had friends because I built this wall around me of like, I have to look perfect, never make a mistake, be perfect, you know, do this and look good on the outside because then I'll have friends and then I'll be perfect, even though I'm miserable. And so it's just a really good reminder that, wow, I have a lot of recovery in this area. Even though I didn't physically, oh, the other thing my sponsor would ask me is, because I'd say, I'm going to get fired. That was my big one. I'm going to get fired if I... And she's like, honey, are you going to have a roof over your head tonight? Are you going to get kicked out of your apartment tonight? No. Okay, if you got kicked out of your apartment, would you have a place to go? Yes. Like, just like those little things. Like, and I had to be... She had to kind of lead me through that because I had a huge fear of economic insecurity, even though I had never actually experienced it. And, you know, through working the steps and through a lot of other things, I've come to realize that for whatever reason, I don't know why, one of my sponsors says, you know, more is my favorite amount. And, but it's like, I don't know why I have that. I don't know why I feel like, you know, the ground can fall out under me or whatever. But through this program and through sponsors, like my sponsor that I had, and through the big book and through relying on a higher power and, you know, remembering, and like people have said, it's imperfect, that I don't get to manage and control my life. Like, God's going to take care of me. And through doing all those things, it's like I don't have that anymore. Even though, if you know, when I first read this, my first reaction is, oh, I never have this. This one doesn't apply to me. And it's just, it cracked me up that I thought that. And, you know, just that fear of, like, I mean, just... you know, the fear that people wouldn't like me or that people would think that I made a mistake. You know, that was a big thing. That's a huge part of my recovery. In my job today, if I make a mistake, thank you. I say, oh, I'm sorry, I made a mistake. Like, how can we fix it? And it's like, oh, big deal. But before, if I made a mistake, it was like I would blame someone else. I would try to hide it. I would pretend that it didn't happen. I would, I mean, anything. But I had to kind of create this facade. And I've learned, wow, I'm a human being. And it's really not that big of a deal. So, yeah, this is a promise that came true. And I don't know. I think, like others have said, it's not like one day I woke up and said, you know, now I know that God is going to take care of me and that I'm fine no matter what, even if I get fired. Which, like, that concept, which I'm really not in danger of, that concept's just, it was just unreal to me. Like, I would have been like, no, I will die if I get, like, I really thought, like, I would die or something. And I'm just so grateful to this program for teaching me all of these things that I just, for some reason, never learned. So, thanks to all of you for being here, and thanks for listening.
I'm Top Full School Reader, and I got number 11. I got a lot of feelings right now. Okay, we will intuitively know how to handle situations which used to baffle us. I'm maybe not the best person to talk about this. One day I decided to quit my job, and I gained 200 pounds in a year. Would you want to ask me to do the intuitive? How would you handle a situation? Quit my job and go to town, you know, that's what I want to do. Used to baffle us. I am a baffled person. I am on step 10, but that doesn't make sense because this is the first time in program. I've been in program since 2002 with a 1 year, 200 pound relapse. And I never got close to step 9. I relapsed on step 6. And I was going great guns. I was down 30 pounds less than I am now. I had that nice sharp look. And I was feeling pretty good. But then I took that first compulsive bite, which was intuitive eating, I think. I've heard someone describe it as intuitive eating. And I don't want to do that anymore. The best way I can get... Today was a booked day. I got up, I called my sponsor, I went to a meeting. I had an appointment after that with a doctor, and then I went to lunch, and then I went to dinner after a few hours with my grand sponsor, and then I'm in this meeting. So I have been directed all day long to stay away from the TV set and my favorite foods. I prayed this morning for God's will because I will die of this disease quickly. I've spent many years on disability because I couldn't leave the house. So I cannot run my life on my own thoughts, although it seems like it should work. My sponsor has a similar hideous story, so you'd think, why dealing with a sponsor that would be any better? It turns out he worked the steps of this program, All's Well. And he has had a spiritual awakening, which allows him to see the world differently and allows him to guide me on my path. And that's the only thing, because otherwise this is a diet, and eventually I'll start intuitively eating again. Today I feel unconcerned about the food. I'm going to have dinner after this with friends, and I'm going to go to sleep tonight. That's a good deal. Anyway, my first sponsor was... another hideous story, should be dead, said that it was just wonderful for him to be able to walk the earth. Because that's where this disease, it doesn't only mangle us physically, it makes us almost not human. Just I close the drapes and I stay home until the sheriff comes to throw me out because I can't pay rent. So I'm glad I have... the ability to reach out and say, I need help with my life. And I don't say it that way, but when I make an outreach call, that's basically what I'm saying. I'm telling you what's going on with my life. It's a lot of screwed up thoughts. But as long as I don't begin connecting them with actions, I can have a life where I won't start eating today. And that is what Overeaters Anonymous provides me. I don't have to start eating today. and I can have a fairly decent life. I have not achieved usefulness yet, or freedom from fear of people. That's a big one for me. I don't have financial insecurity, and I'm afraid of it. I am currently on, the biggest amends that I have to make are to my parents and my brothers. When you hide in your apartment all day long, if you don't really get out to hurt much, you know, other people. But it's going to take decades for me to pay back everything I've taken from them, especially their emotional security. And from my parents, it's getting close to 6 figures. I'm 40 years old, and I've required a lot of treatment of various kinds and subsidy in my disease. So I need to be abstinent. I have gotten a lot of things out of this program. I'm at normal weight. Of course, I'm not happy with it. You know, I can be too high or too low, depending on how I feel. But I've basically allowed my sponsor to be intuitive with my weight. So he says I'm where I'm supposed to be. That's fine. I go to work every day. I have a job, which is rare for me. I have a deep feeling that the world owes me a living. And they didn't. So that's another intuitive thought that has not served me well. So anyway, I'm very glad to be here tonight, and I'm glad that the recovery is a wee deal, because this is not the way I thought I would recover. Not even close. This doesn't seem like it should work. But it does. Thanks for letting me share.
Hi, I'm Ken. I'm an abstaining compulsive overeater.
Hi, Ken.
Good to be here. I've always called myself an overachiever with a fork. I'm maintaining over 120-pound weight loss, and my abstinence started on the Saturday after Thanksgiving in 1978. I accepted a candle for 29 years last month. And coming to realize, suddenly realize, it happened when I worked the steps. And I worked the steps as a very stubborn person. If I could prove they don't work, I don't have to be here. Well, it's 29 years later. I'm still here. I worked them very quickly. It took me only two and a half years. But in working step, reading step one and two, writing on them both, and sharing them with my sponsor, I finally got to try to unravel the mystery of step three. How do I turn my will and my life over? I read step three in the 12 and 12. We talked about powerlessness, and he pointed out I have no power over very simple things in life, like making day turn to night, like making flowers open, and I agreed with him. I don't have power over that. And so we finished our discussion. I looked at him. I said, so how do I find God? And the words he said to me shook me. He said, Ken, your job is not to find God. Your job is to look for God. And you look for God when you go to a meeting. When you pick up the phone because someone called you, or you pick up the phone because you want to talk to someone else. You find God when you're at a meeting and you shut up for half an hour and listen to 10 other people pitch and look for their recovery and find your own. You look for God when you read the big book, because it's not a book that's really that interesting to me. I mean, it's 560 pages with no pictures. I was always hoping they'd make a movie out of it and I wouldn't have to read it at all. But they didn't. And I have read it. And it started with honesty. I'm referring to the third edition. That's where I come from. On pages 482, it talks about self-honesty. Not cash register honesty. Self-honesty. If I tell you I'm going to do something, I'm going to do it. If I have to make a change today, I have to make the commitment to someone else that I need to make the change. I cannot make some of these simple decisions myself, or I'll start listening to my disease again. My disease never lived on my body. It lives between my ears. And many years ago, Dr. Bob, in the founding days of this program, Dr. Bob was asked by someone, this is before the big book was even written, said, what do you do at those meetings? People, he stopped drinking. What do you do? What do you teach them? And he says, well, we have steps, we have traditions, we have tools, we have all these things, but there's only three things you have to know. Three. And he took his prescription pad and he wrote down three items. And he wrote, one, trust God. Two, clean house between the ears. and 3, do for others. And he signed it Dr. Bob. And many years later, I was fortunate to get a copy of this prescription, which I cherish at home. And it is that simple. We trust God that he has the answer, I don't. I have to clean house. If I think about something more than 5 minutes, I want to talk about it to someone else, or else I'll think about it the rest of the day. And if I do for others, I'm helping myself. And doing for others is listening to someone at a meeting, taking a job at meetings, asking if someone needs a ride, being available as a sponsor. The list is endless. But I learned these things here. I had a great education. I went through grammar school, high school, graduated college with a degree, and I learned how to make a living. But my education started and ended here. This is where I learned how to do life. And you can't learn that out there. And this is just as free as all the other schooling I had. But this is a matter of choice. You have to more than need this program. You have to both need and want it. And today I cherish it. So I'll leave you with a few words. I carry adages around with me that have to do with this program. And they were written or said by people that had nothing to do with this program. And I'm going to choose one tonight from a woman, author, who her name is Colette. She said these words in the 1950s when she was well up in her 80s. And shortly before her death, she said, I had a beautiful life. I wish I knew it sooner. Thank you very much.